This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
As we have seen in the Senate for the past 2 weeks, words can be forceful and sound all legal and learned without being true. Same with numbers. They sound authoritative and literally measured, but they also can be wrongly derived or invoked out of context, especially when a pathogen is making its way around the globe.
The World Health Organization has declared the coronavirus outbreak a public health emergency of international concern.
Just now confirming that the nation's first person-to-person transmission of the coronavirus has been reported.
The Wuhan coronavirus has in a few weeks infected at least 9,700 people around the world. As of Friday afternoon, 213 have died because it often leads to pneumonia, and that can advance too rapidly for antibiotic treatment to be effective. Furthermore, it can be spread before symptoms occur, turning travelers into unwitting typhoid Marys. Public health officials are therefore on high alert, but that's different from panic. Last week, one Harvard-connected epidemiologist freaked out Twitter by citing a number called the R-naught value that public health researchers use to estimate how contagious a disease is. The problem is early estimates tend to be rough and quickly mitigated by public health actions. This researcher tweeted that the coronavirus was a burgeoning apocalyptic contagion. Whatever coronavirus might do, his tweet went viral and panic ensued. Alexis Madrigal wrote about the Twitter-demic in The Atlantic. Alexis, welcome to OTM.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, this one tweet by one Harvard-affiliated public health researcher, his name is Eric Feigl-Ding, a guy with tons of epidemiological credentials. Tell me what he tweeted.
So, you know, he's sitting at home, is reading a paper that has not been peer-reviewed, but that researchers had put up on the internet so that they could kind of share it with each other. And he tweets, "Holy mother of God, the new coronavirus is a 3.8. How bad is that reproductive R-naught value? It is thermonuclear pandemic level bad." Multiple exclamation points, you know. This thread took off and, of course, attributed to Harvard epidemiologist.
You wrote that the tweet was lacking in context. What's the context that would have made it more understandable?
That number is socially constructed. It is both a feature of the virus, but it's also what governments do in response, what people do in response. So that's one part of the context. And the other part of the context is that it was too early to be making that determination. You know, he did try and shade around these things. I think what makes this such an interesting case is that it wasn't a grifter who was out there trying to grab whatever attention they could and shove it into their pockets and make money off of it.
Wasn't a Russian troll, wasn't a bot.
It wasn't any of those things. I read it as someone who has 2,000 followers, not a big following on Twitter. He's reading the paper and he just goes like, "Oh my gosh, I can't believe this." And he just tweeted it out.
You spoke to him. Where is he on this?
He was remorseful. I think it stunned him. Because it wasn't just the tweet that went viral. He himself had this viral moment where suddenly tens of thousands of people were following him specifically. So he heavily moderated his tone and hewed much more closely to the kind of public health researcher line that's out there.
There was something else that you referred to in your piece, another kind of statistical meditation on contagion from Mark Zuckerberg himself. There is this threshold of a social media post just barely on the right side of acceptability and not takedownability, which is so provocative that it shoots the virality of the tweet way up.
He called it borderline content. Facebook's got a bunch of different rules for what things are takedownable, what things are bannable. What they found in their data was that the closer the content seemed to get to that bannable line, the better it did. The virality would go up. And in fact, you know, another public health researcher called Feigelding's tweet borderline public health malpractice. And I think that is why the tweet and the thread took off, because it didn't quite transgress. It wasn't like a crazy conspiracy theory or anything like that. There was a paper that was being referenced. Some of the caveats were included in the thread, but it was like right up near the border of what someone like him could or should have said. And that was explosive.
You know, you could argue that the Wuhan coronavirus as a story was made for this flood of misinformation and maybe disinformation. In 2003, in the SARS epidemic, China, like, shut down information. They lied to the public. They lied to the World Health Organization. The public was, I guess, primed to believe that Wuhan was going to be worse than whatever the Chinese government was revealing.
I think there are really three factors that made this particularly well-suited for this kind of attention rustling on Twitter. I mean, one is, as you mentioned, you know, the Chinese government is known for various types of secrecy and American sort of basic lack of understanding about how things work and inability to read things on the Chinese internet, really even know cities with millions of people in China that are referenced in different reports. You know, it makes for like a big hole in people's knowledge and ability to kind of stress test. The other thing I think is the xenophobia. It got pretty ugly. I mean, there's many, many tweets, particularly around the food, that are just baldly racist. Images of people eating a kind of bat soup as well as a snake soup. And I think the third thing is a totally new thing or a newish thing, which is that the internet has splintered in a way where the American and sort of largely Western social media kind of exists in one realm of the internet, and then Chinese media entities exist in another. And so people kind of arbitrage videos out of the Chinese internet into Twitter. You kind of lose all the provenance of a video. If you're not really paying attention, it can seem like, oh my God, there's all these videos of like these hospitals in Wuhan where all this stuff is going on. But when you really go look, it's like three videos, but posted hundreds of different times by hundreds of different people, all trying to kind of hit that viral jackpot or something. Maybe they're just being like, man, this is scary. You know, whoa, they're just talking among their friends. But the combined impact of that is to make what's happening seem terrifying. It may be that it is, but this wouldn't be the way that you would know it. You know what I mean?
All right. Now, you asked a fantastic question, and I am going to quote it back to you now and ask you to answer it. The question is, can any lay consumer of news be expected to sort all this out in real time, especially when the most qualified people are providing intentionally less engaging or dramatic commentary, which interrupts the cosplay of being someone learning about a disease outbreak?
I don't think any lay consumer can be expected to do it. I mean, I think that's the problem. It's hard enough for reporters when we do this all the time and are highly skilled to figure out like who's reliable and who's not. It's hard. For me, personally, if there's ever an epidemic or pandemic, I'm going to Ed Yong, my colleague at The Atlantic, who's just absolutely rigorous and reliable. But for the general case of like, what do you do in a crisis? It's pretty tough. I, like many other people, would turn to a trusted publication, even if it's slower than Twitter or, you know, even certain forms of broadcast media that move very fast.
What's Ed's Twitter handle?
EdYong209.
All right, folks, if you insist on going to Twitter for pandemic journalism, you might start there. Alexis, thank you.
Thanks so much.
Alexis Madrigal is a staff writer at The Atlantic, where he recently wrote How to Misinform Yourself About the Coronavirus.
Coming up, can Bernie win some Joe Rogan bros? How much will it cost him?
This is On the Media.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.